Chapter 29. Perhaps checking Rodina Station's hub for survivors hadn't been such a good idea, Lokai thought. In the conference rooms, off the main hallway, she found only bloodstains and damage from the creature's claws and acid blood. Oddly, the door to the meeting room across from Suslov's private office was completely unmarred. Even its occupied sign was still in place. The prospect of finding someone else alive made her heart beat faster. Then she opened the door to find that acid had eaten an enormous hole through the center of the floor, leaving a jagged perimeter barely 2 feet wide. She wondered how many decks the alien acid blood had burned through before it petered out, but she didn't move in for a closer look. What remained of the floor might not hold her weight, and yet she couldn't make herself step back and close the door either. Probably shock. It nibbled at the edges of her mind, trying to get in, but she'd managed to keep it at bay. Shock wasn't a luxury she could afford right now. Collapsing and letting the trauma headbugs run wild had to wait till later, whenever that was. It took a little time, but she finally got herself moving again. As she closed the door and turned away, her gaze fell on the gold-colored nameplate across the hall. Colonel Dr. Timur Suslov. Lokai had thought the Gothic lettering was a silly affectation that showed Suslov wasn't as committed to progressive politics as he claimed. She still thought so. Not that it mattered anymore. Her gaze moved to the framed prints on the wall. They were a fairly recent addition. Someone had convinced Suslov that Rodina Station needed more in the way of visual interest. Nothing frivolous or silly like capitalists. Things that would elevate the spirit and remind the progressive peoples they were part of a long, gloriously high-minded tradition conceived before humans had gone into space. Lokai found the artwork bewildering. Most of the prints were stylized images of groups, seemingly all men, brandishing tools like weapons, some with captions in Russian, others in Spanish. The more recent pieces showed oddly designed robot-like machines, while in others, people wore machines, like clothes, in configurations so bizarre she couldn't imagine what they were for. The blood and tissue splattered on them didn't help. There was more blood splashed on the walls along with blobs of black sludge that stuck to whatever it landed on, then dried to become as hard as stone. Lokai avoided touching it, even with gloves. Now she headed toward the partly open door to the control room, careful not to make a sound. The hub was supposed to run itself in the event that all the humans were incapacitated. She hoped she'd be able to see which systems were still functioning in good order, which ones were faltering, and which had quit. In particular, she wanted to know how much longer life support would hold up. So far, it was still online, but there was a funny smell in the air, something like melting rubber mixed with burned-out electronics. And it was getting stronger. She passed a print showing Karl Marx and Vladimir Lenin as giants with their arms around each other's shoulders, looking benignly down at a multitude of noble workers marching nobly off to their noble jobs. All men. Not a woman among them. Well, Stalin had wiped out 10 million of his own people, and as a man of his time, he'd probably gone by that old rule of thumb, women and children first. Lokai shook the thought away. In school, she'd never distinguished herself in the study of history, Russian or otherwise, but here she was with Rodina Station falling apart around her and a life expectancy that might be hours at best. And what was she thinking about? Fucking Stalin. The rustling sound of many legs came to her suddenly, and she froze, not even breathing. Facehuggers. The noise was unmistakable. They were approaching from the corridor that crossed her own, 3 meters ahead. Both passageways were the same size, making it less likely the little bastards would change course, although she couldn't depend on that. If they spotted her, they'd go right for her and she'd never shake them. They'd chase her until one of them got her. Or she managed to kill all of them. Like the other forms, facehuggers didn't seem to know they could be killed or even injured. It should have been a weakness. Instead, it made them relentless. The rustling grew louder. Once they hatched, facehuggers didn't live nearly as long as fully mature aliens, nor were their senses as keen. She flattened herself against the wall, holding the butt of the rifle in front of her face, and kept completely still, not even breathing. After an extremely long moment, 3 facehuggers raced by on skeletal finger legs, tails whipping the air behind them. We're late, for a very important date. Look High had to bite her lips together to keep from laughing. She gave it a count of 10 and then dashed across the intersection, looking straight ahead at the control center. It was safer not to look in their direction, not even a quick glance to see how far away they were. They seemed to feel it. At least there were no more junctions. When she got to the control center, she could lock herself in and have a breakdown of epic proportions, cry until her eyes ran down her cheeks along with her tears. All she had to do was get there. The walls just outside the hub were clean, untouched by blood, black sludge, or acid, but the last print on the left was missing. The empty space gaped. Why anyone fleeing a painful and ghastly death would feel an overwhelming need for a souvenir from socialism's halcyon days was beyond her. Maybe just art for art's sake, she thought as she pushed the door all the way open and stepped inside. When her mind started working again, she found herself sitting on the floor and immediately got to her feet. Just as she'd expected, the control room was abandoned. Long abandoned. She could tell she was the first human to set foot in the place since the crew had bailed, and she would certainly be the last. But she had to give up on the idea of restoring the comms or checking on life support or anything else. All of the equipment was completely inaccessible, buried under a thick layer of hardened black alien crap. Having a hysterical crying fit was out, too. All around her, the walls were covered with people in cocoons, people of all colors, all sizes, adults, adolescents, children. Some were intact, still gestating, while others had served their purpose, the ruins of their bodies crusted with blood dried black or still wet and shiny. When the aliens had run out of wall space, they had simply covered the old cocoons with newer ones. Look High had no idea how long she had been sitting on the floor gaping at the grotesque gallery before her head cleared. Now, she found herself wondering why the aliens had put cocoons on top of others when there was still plenty of space all over Radina. The answer came to her unbidden. Art for art's sake. She started toward a door on the other side of the room, then caught herself and decided to go back the way she had come in. There was no telling what the other door led to. Maybe a hallway where cocoons hung between more framed prints celebrating the noble ideals of the noble past, where everyone thought the future would be even more noble. Not full of cocoons. Art for arts. Screw caution, she thought, and fled. Jackson was now pacing between various consoles, checking the monitors and muttering curses under her breath. It would have driven Rossetti crazy, except he understood how she felt. There had been no word from Hicks since his frantic call about the vents. As if she had caught the drift of Rossetti's thoughts, she tried to contact the squad again, then Walker, and then anyone else. With no success. Whatever happened at the air scrubber must have screwed up the comms for the whole area, Jackson said. She slumped down on a well-worn office chair on wheels.
Then we'll just have to wait till they make contact.
Rossetti glanced at the two Marines he'd called in on guard duty security before comms had gone down.
I'm not sending anyone else out until we have some idea of what's going on.
Jackson made a pained face. I wish you wouldn't say things I agree with. It makes me nervous.
Likewise, Rossetti said silently, turning away to take another painkiller.
As he turned back, he caught sight of Bishop, who met his gaze with his usual android inscrutability. On impulse, he asked,
What do you think?
We could try sending a drone, Bishop started.
Jackson made a frustrated noise.
God damn it, I just said the comms are screwed up. There's no reliable...
The console chimed suddenly.
Hey, Rodina's got company.
The larger screen now displayed the UPP headquarters as seen from one of several spy microsatellites. Rossetti couldn't remember if it was military or one of the company private eyes he wasn't supposed to know about. The vessel approaching the space station was about a mile long and bristling with armaments. It was also the last thing Rossetti wanted to see.
Jesus, Jackson said. That doesn't look like a rescue ship.
It isn't, Rossetti replied as the spacecraft went into a very wide orbit around Rodina. It's the Nikolai Stoiko. And it's early.
Look High covered two large toolboxes with flight jackets, strapped them into the front seat of the flimsy electronic Jeep, and set it to run driverless around the far end of the maintenance deck. It wouldn't fool the alien chasing her for more than a few seconds, but with any luck, she could put a lot more distance between herself and it.
With any luck? Not anymore.
Her nickname had worn out. Maybe she should have gone with, "Hey, look!" after all. The alien gave another long, inhuman scream. It was very close now. She sprinted into the storeroom, locked the door, and piled several crates in front of it before climbing the corner shelf unit to a loose panel in the ceiling. Only a few people knew about this particular crawl space. The configuration of air ducts, pipes, and metal framework blocked locator signals, making it a good place for unscheduled downtime. It was one of half a dozen dead spots scattered around the station, and those who knew about them were careful not to use them too often so the authorities wouldn't find out and fix them. Unfortunately, aliens weren't as easy to fool. But they could be distracted, which slowed them down, albeit only briefly. The Jeep decoy wouldn't draw its attention for more than a few seconds, but that might give her just enough time for what she needed to do. Because time was relative. Einstein had said so. Spending an hour with a lover could feel like a few seconds, while a few seconds of being torn apart by an alien would seem like forever. That was the theory of relativity, she thought, crawling through the dark space above the ceiling, and it explained how everything else she had ever done was just gone, and running from a monster was now her whole life. She heard the distant sound of a crash followed by another raw, enraged scream. That would be the alien discovering the Jeep was a ruse. It would hit the storeroom next. The creature seemed to have no trouble homing in on her. Maybe her being the only human left on Rodina made it easy to pick up her spoor. Look High hadn't seen another living human for hours, or had it been years since that encounter. The woman had been convulsing on the floor, writhing as blood poured from her eyes and mouth. Then the skin on her hands had split open with an awful ripping sound. When the talons emerged, the woman had begged Look High to kill her. She had made it as quick as possible. Red blood merged with acid blood and vanished, while holes appeared in the floor around the body and widened. Look High had burst into tears. Right after that, the alien had found her. Maybe, as in that old song, it could follow the tracks of her tears, even though she wasn't crying anymore. Or she hadn't thought she was, except every time she touched her face, it was wet. Like now. Irritated, she wiped her cheeks roughly on her sleeves. This wasn't like her. She'd never been the weepy type. She tightened the strap on the rifle and slung it crosswise on her back so it wouldn't slide when she moved, and shone her flashlight around the dark crawlspace. Up ahead, something glinted in the darkness. A narrow metal ladder and a maintenance conduit. Look High dropped her torch down the front of her shirt and crawled toward it as fast as she could, reaching the ladder just as she heard the alien break into the storeroom, hissing and screaming. The sounds followed her up the ladder. They always followed her. At least she was getting closer to the departure deck. If the flight crew on duty had maintained their schedule before Rodina had gone to hell, she'd find an interceptor fueled up and ready to go. Of course, there was a chance she'd find a welcoming committee of aliens had already trashed it, but she'd have to burn that bridge when she came to it. Below her, she heard the scuttle of large claws, then another ear-splitting scream. Looking down, she saw the creature snapping its extra set of teeth at her in furious frustration. The conduit was too small, it couldn't follow her. The ladder vibrated in her grip as the monster slammed against it, but the metal didn't budge, didn't bend or buckle. Yet. Look High climbed faster. The creature screamed up at her again, and for the first time she thought she'd detected the faint echo of a human voice. What if this one had been someone she had known personally? Someone who she'd shared meals with, worked with, talked with, laughed with. A friend, now transformed into a monster, all for the greater glory of that preening fool Suslov. The alien screamed once more and scrabbled back into the crawlspace, retracing its previous route. Not because it had given up, she knew, but to look for some other way to get at her. She kept climbing, going up another two levels before stopping at another crawlspace. No pillows here, just boards to floor it over for work crews doing maintenance. The boards weren't nailed or glued, but they were sized to fit snugly. It took almost half a minute to find one loose enough to pry up. She kicked out the ceiling panel and poked her head through for a look. Oh yeah, this was the right place. As she slipped through the opening, she felt her throat tighten. Oh great, she'd turned into one of those fragile types who cried when they were happy. Grow up, Look High told herself. She eased herself down, dangled briefly by her hands, and dropped onto a small table directly below. It tipped over, and she automatically tucked and rolled, bouncing to her feet right at the door. She opened it a crack. The departure deck was empty. There was no welcoming committee, and nothing had been trashed. The interceptor was untouched, undamaged, fully prepped, and good to go. Pretending there weren't tears running down her face, she ran for it. Right on cue, she heard inhuman screams just outside the deck, already too close. Ignoring the aches in her strained leg muscles, Look High flung herself at the boarding ladder, tumbled through the airlock into the cabin, and hit the emergency lockdown button. The outer hatch slammed shut half a second before something big smashed against it, screaming with fury. Was that her alien or a different one? She couldn't tell. Didn't matter. She wouldn't mind if she never heard that sound again for the rest of her life. Except, of course, in her nightmares. But if she didn't move her ass and get the fuck out of here, she wouldn't live long enough to have one nightmare. The moment she was in the pilot's seat, training kicked in and put her in flight mode. She reached under the control board, found the handle every pilot had been told never to touch, and yanked it, hard. There was a jarring thump she felt more than heard as the departure deck began the exigent launch procedure, which could not be paused or canceled. Bright red lights flashed and sirens blared, warning anyone still on the deck that they had 5 seconds to be elsewhere before the bay doors opened. It was more like 3 seconds, Look High noted, watching through the forward viewport as the sliver of starry space appeared and grew wider. Under the sirens, she heard claws skittering the length of the craft and waited to see one or more of the monsters sucked out into the vacuum ahead of her along with everything that hadn't been nailed to the deck. Nothing happened. What the fuck? She wondered as fragments of an electronic jeep tumbled past. What the fucking f— And all at once, it was there in front of her, the hideous, eyeless face grinning viciously at her on the other side of the viewport. Its second set of teeth shot out and slammed against the vacuum-proof glass, making Look High jump. For one terrible moment, she was afraid cracks would appear and spread outward from the point of impact, but the viewport wasn't even scratched. She decided not to find out if the glass would stand up to another hit and checked the launch status. The bay doors were about halfway open. If her aim was true, that was wide enough. If not, all her troubles were over. She yanked the cover off the turbo control, set it to maximum, and hit launch. The sudden acceleration threw her back against the pilot's seat hard enough to knock the wind out of her. The alien clawed frantically at the viewport as it started to slide away. Look High closed her eyes and braced herself, hoping that if she scraped the side of the interceptor on one of the bay doors, it wouldn't damage the hull so badly that it buckled before she found safety. For a few seconds, she heard claws dragging along the length of the interceptor, and then nothing. No scrabbling, no skittering. Nothing at all. Limp with relief, she let her eyes close. Goodbye, you demon bastards. Minutes later, the G-force started to ease up and Look High opened her eyes. There was nothing to see through the viewport except tiny dots of light against black nothing. She was trembling again, but she didn't care. Shifting position to strap herself in properly, she caught sight of a reading on the control panel. The proximity detector said she had missed the door on the right by centimeters. If she'd done that in training, her instructor would have made her clean grease traps for a week. The interceptor's trajectory was changing to a wide curve as the autopilot prepared to slingshot around Rodina when Look High saw another spacecraft in orbit around the space station. She had just enough time to register the name, Nikolai Stoiko, before there was a brief flash from one of its cannons and something streaked through the black straight to Rodina. The universe became a blinding white blank.